Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I would like to talk to you this morning about this coming week's Parsha, the Chukosai. There are two prakim in the Parsha, Perek Chavav, Perek Chav Zayin, chapter 26, chapter 27. Chapter 26 is the infamous Tochacha chapter. Some of you may be more familiar with the Tochacha chapter in Sefer Devarim and not realize that there's a Tochacha one in Vayikra also. The truth of the matter is there's a Ramban that compares the Tochacha in this Parsha to the one in Devarim and compares and contrasts them and talks about how one is in plural and one is in singular, and we're not going to talk about that today. But it basically goes, Tochacha means rebuke, and it basically goes through the fact that if you keep Hashem's mitzvos, you get rewards. If you don't, you get punishments, and the punishments that are detailed in the parak are quite explicit and quite graphic and really quite nasty. It's actually customary when this parak is read, both in Vayikra and Devarim, that the Baal Koreh reads it in an undertone. There are a couple of different reasons why that might be. Either it's unpleasant to hear it, or one idea I heard was that we don't want our enemies to hear what's in there because they might want to do it to us. The truth of the matter is, it's rebuke. It might be good for us to hear what's there. It might make us keep the mitzvos more, but I'm sure I'm in a minority opinion on that one, and we'd all have to get to shul on time to hear what's there, but enough of that. That's Perek Chavav. Perek Chav Zayin, chapter 27, is about arachot, arachin, values, and it's basically a chapter that talks about the value of humans, animals, fields, houses, and if somebody wanted to pay the value of any one of those things to the Mikdash, instead of giving them to the Mikdash, you would pay the equivalent value of them to the Mikdash, and the Perek discusses all of those different equivalent values and how that process works, and that's next week's Parsha. So I'd like to spend a few moments talking about Perek Chav Zayin. So if you'll look with me to source number one, we will look at the first few psukim of Perek Chav Zayin. V'yidaber Hashem Moshe l'mor, Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarte elehem, ish ki yafli neder v'arkacha nafshot l'Hashem. Speak to b'nei Yisrael and say to the Hashem, if a man makes a vow, when he values souls to Hashem, v'haya arkacha hazachar mi-ben 20 shana v'ad ben 60 shana, v'haya arkacha 50 shekel kesef v'shekel kodesh. The value of a male from 20 years to 60 years is the value of 50 shekels of the holy silver shekel. Pasuk Dalet, the fourth pasuk, v'im nekevahi, and if she is a female, v'haya erkecha 30 shekel, she is the value of 30 shekel. Okay, that's the first four psukim of Perek Chav Zayin. Okay, fun. So the first thing I want to talk about is the Abarbanel, who wants to discuss the fact, just in general, if you were to go through the rest of Perek Chav Zayin, where it discusses men and women during different ages in their life, 20 to 60, over 60, from 1 month to 5 years old, etc., etc., and it sets specific amounts and values to every single one of those ages, and it does differentiate between genders, and it has very specific amounts, and the Abarbanel is going to discuss why it has specific values set in advance. So if you look with me in source number two, I'd like to read the Abarbanel with you. V'hine b'nidarim asher ka'ela lo ratzta ha'torah she'ya'arich ha'kohen et nafshot b'nei adam ke'ilu hem sus. O Chamor. Ki ulai echad noder ben chacham asher lo, v'im yarichenu ha-kohen kol eile, kol asher la'ish yitain ba'ad nafsho. Because God, when it came to doing these kinds of vows, the Torah didn't want a person to come in front of a Kohen, because the Kohen is the one who, if you have a field and you're not sure how much it's worth, the Kohen is the one who evaluates the worth of that field, evaluates the worth of that animal, and so on. The Torah didn't want that you should bring yourself to the Kohen, and the Kohen should look you over like you're some horse or some donkey, and evaluate you like a beast of burden, and try to decide, you know, what you are. And some ben chacham, some wise person, should look you over and try to figure out what you're like. Line two in the middle. Gam shelo haya ra'ui sheyarichu bnei Yisrael be'erech ha'avadim. Lama shaveh kol achad mehem la'avod v'lamasa. Like, you shouldn't be coming, Bnei Yisrael shouldn't be coming and start to be evaluated how much you're worth, as if you're some slave. Like, how much work can you do? Are you worth a lot? Are you not worth a lot? Oh, I can get a lot of money for you. You, I don't know, not so much. Ki yezegnai v'cher paritzufa le'ish asher lo nefesh yikara. Everybody has, you know, very valuable souls, and this would be very denigrating and a huge busha. Would be very embarrassing for people. This would arouse a lot of jealousy between people. And then what would happen if one guy, he gets evaluated a lot because of how intelligent he is, and one other guy, because of, you know, how old he is, he doesn't get evaluated so much. And one person gets honored a lot more than the other. Not such a good situation. In order to remove kol ha-machshalot ta'ela, all of these pitfalls, bi'yara ha-tora, kama yitain ha-noder al nefesh ha-cham mididro, kifi shanav ani yeh o asher chacham asochel. The Torah set, preset values per person, per age, no matter what you're like. You could be stupid, you could be poor, you could be rich, you could be whatever. Everybody gets the same amount of money because everybody was made B'Tselem Elohim, and every single person has value, and that's just the end of the story. So I think that the Abarbanel sets us off with a really nice message, that the Torah didn't want people to be jealous, and the Torah didn't want us to go through this judgment, which, before we get any further in the shiur, I just think is a nice little moment to think about how we should all be less judgmental. I'm thinking about that myself too. And that how we all shouldn't be thinking about who's better or what, whatever. Just right away we learned something special from a parak that could otherwise sound incredibly boring. And the Torah set values so that everybody always knows that we're all valuable Tzelem Elohim. Now, the issue you think I completely glossed over and completely ignored after I read Pasuk Daled about how men were worth 50 and women were worth 30, and you were quite surprised that I went straight to the Abarbanel and totally ignored that Pasuk. You were right. I don't have any good answers for that. And neither do any of the Mefarshim, because I looked up quite a few. Why are men worth 50 and women worth 30? I don't know. I'm going to give you some of the answers I found. But if I asked you to come up with some, you're going to tell me all the answers that I found. You want to tell me some? Okay, well, yeah? I can't hear you. Thank you, correct. We don't do as much work. In those days, women didn't do as much labor as men, so we weren't worth as much. In the marketplace, in those days, that wasn't valued the same. And in fact, giving birth was something that could cut your life short. So in fact, that would be used against them. So, and then the other one, come on, you know the other one that's going to make us worth less. And I'm not being sarcastic, I'm being serious. Come on, you know the other one. What? There's more of us. No. What? Laws of inheritance. That's a good one. But it's not one I found. Mitzvos. Come on. She said laws of inheritance. We're not obligated in all 613 mitzvos. So since we're not commanded in all of them, I don't know. Okay. So that's basically what I found. All the others I'm not even mentioning. The answer that I really like the best is the one I brought on the page, number 3. It's not satisfying, but it's the best answer. Even Ezra, when discussing this, Miben Esrim Shana V'dat Rabim Kizo Gzerat Melech. This is a chok. We will not understand it. When trying to understand why there are different amounts, and he's not just talking about gender differentiation, he's talking in general where the amounts came from at all. He basically says it's a chok. He does not know where any of it came from. So that's the one I'm going with. If anyone at any time comes up with a better answer, Karen, and I'm sure they all have my email, I'm not joking, please feel free to email me. And I know that this gets listened to on the internet. I do get contacted years from now. Whoever listens, please feel free to contact me with a better answer. Okay. Moving right along. As you go through the perek, we hit a pasuk later on that is now going to be the focus of our shiur. So I want to move on to towards the end of the perek. Now, something I want to help you realize that sort of hits with the Abarbanel is this idea that the first half of the parsha is all about the tochacha, which is quite depressing. And then you move on to this perek, all about the value of things. And you could ask yourself, what does one thing have anything to do with the other? So the Chose of Lublin actually has a really nice message about that. And what he says is that when you're done hearing the tochacha, you could be very depressed. And the rebukes and the punishments that you get after hearing what will happen to you if you don't keep the mitzvot are significantly larger. There's more of them in the perek than the rewards. And when you're done, you could feel just like there's no point. So what the Chose of Lublin says is, after that perek, when you sort of feel like there's no point anymore, the Torah put in the perek about the value of human life to sort of say, that's not true at all. God really does believe that each and every one of us does have value, and he thinks that each one of us has something to contribute to the Mikdash, and if we were to redeem ourselves, there is something that we could give, and therefore the smichut parshiot, the juxtaposition of the two subjects, is to make sure that as depressing as the previous chapter was, we shouldn't walk out feeling like there's no point, there really is value. And I thought that was a nice idea. If you'll look with me in source number 4, if you continue through chapter 27, Perek Chav Zayin, you hit Pasuk Chav Chet and Pasuk Chav Tet. So it says, Pasuk Chav Chet, Ach kol cherem asher yachrem ish la'ashem, mikol asher lo mi'adam uveima, u'misadeh chuzato lo yimacher v'lo yigael, kol cherem kodesh kodeshim hu la'ashem. Any cherem that a man makes to Hashem, cherem means it's consecrated or dedicated to Hashem, that you, any human, any animal, any field that you consecrate as a cherem, once it's called cherem, you can no longer sell it, you can no longer redeem it. This cherem is now kodesh kodashim, it is now holy. It is now considered Hashem, and Cherem is a completely different category. It can never be redeemed. It has to be Cherem. Pasuk Chav Tet goes on to explain, verse 29, Kol Cherem asher yechram min ha'adam lo yifadeh mot yumat. Any Cherem that you make from a human, you cannot redeem. They have to die. Already then. So we are going to spend the next half hour trying to understand this pasuk. When exactly is a person made a cherem? How exactly does that happen? Is he really put to death if he's put into cherem? Like, what exactly does that work? And we're not talking about, you know, oh, he can't go to shul and he doesn't get an aliyah. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a person being put into cherem and put to death. So what are the circumstances, okay, that we're talking about here? So in order to... I'm sorry. That's actually not going to be borne out. That's not actually the way it works. You can't put someone else in cherem. Is actually, I can't put you in cherem. You'll see. You'll see. Give me some time. If you still have questions at the end, feel free to ask me. Okay. So the Ramban is going to help us figure out exactly what this pasuk is talking about. So if you look with me in source number 5, let's do the first 3 lines of the Ramban. Kol cherem asher yechram min ha'adam. Hayotze leharig ve'amar echad erko alai lo amar klum mot yumat harehu holech lamut lefichach lo yifadeh ein lo damin ve'lo erech l'shon Rashi. Ramban quotes Rashi, and basically what you're taught, what's the case? When is this person cherem? What is it talking about? He deserves death by a beis din. Whichever one of the 4 cases, he's got a death penalty on his head. And as he's being walked to his death, he shouts, Erko alai, please take the monetary value, the equivalent of me, and pay to the mikdash, please redeem me. The answer is, no, it's as if lo amar klum. It's as if he said nothing because he deserves death. He has no monetary value, and therefore he cannot be redeemed. You can't take any money from him. He has no value. He's a cherem. You can't take anything. He belongs to the mikdash, so to speak. Okay? This is based on the Gemara in Erechin, Daf Vav Amud Bet, that Rashi's basing his answer on. He has to be killed. You can't redeem him. He has no monetary value at that point, because he has a death penalty over his head. That's Rashi's explanation of this pasuk. That's what he thinks the pasuk is referring to. Okay? Ramban continues explaining Rashi and says, Rabotenu nechleku badavar, the rabbis are split on this. Yesh mehem omrim shehu azhara lechayve mitot, she'ein lochim mehem kofer lepatran. That this is a warning to people who are deserving of the death penalty, that we won't take any atonement from them in order to release them from the death penalty. And it's being put here as a warning, because as opposed to other different kinds of cherems where maybe you can be redeemed, they want to be clear that in that particular case you cannot be redeemed. So that's Rashi's point of view, and that's one way to understand this pasuk. The second way to understand this pasuk, al derech hapshat, is the Ramban's own explanation of the pasuk. Yomar katuv ki kol machrim mishalo ben adam ben behema usteach izato hu kodesh l'Hashem shehen charamim lekonim ve'en lahem pidyon. Okay, if somebody wants to give cherem, okay, from something that belongs to him, an adam, a behema, a human, an animal, a field, and it becomes kodesh, okay? They are cherem to the kohen. You can't redeem it, right? But if you are machrim from a human, okay, she'eino shelo, kegon hanilchamim al oyvehem, v'nodrim neder. And if you want to give from a human that doesn't belong to you, like when you're fighting your enemies, and you make a vow, Ve'echramti et zareihem. If you give to me this nation in my hand, then I will make chayrem of all their cities. Just like Bnei Israel did in Bamidbar. Right after Aaron died in Bamidbar, Perek Chaf, what happened was Arad, okay, in Canaan, saw that Aaron had died, and he immediately attacked Bnei Israel, and he took some captives. Immediately after that happened, Bnei Israel said this pasuk that the Ramban quotes, Hashem, if you give them to us, we will make chayrem of their cities. That's what the Ramban is quoting, and Hashem did give them the cities, and they did make chayrem of them. The Ramban says, if you do something like that, Yamutu kol ha'adam ha'nimsa b'hem, you have to kill all the people in the city. V'hata'am, what's the reason behind this? She'ein dat ha'noder kein letitola kohanim. Rak she'ya kol asur b'hana'a, ki nitzkaven l'achrit ha'ayvim u'lechalotam. So what's going on? You're making a vow, and you're basically saying to Hashem, I really want to win this war, and I don't feel like I'm worthy. I'm worried that I'm going to lose. They just attacked me, they just took captives, and I'm not sure that if I fight them, I'm going to make it. So I'm sort of, I'm begging you for help, and I'm hoping that if I make this vow to you, it'll make me more worthy, and it'll show you that I have faith in you, and I'm showing that I believe in you, that I'm asking you for this help. And when you basically say, in a time of war to Hashem, I will make chayrim of this city, okay, you're not really saying, oh, okay, so after the war, I'm going to go take the people of the city and I'm going to bring them to the Kohanim when I'm finished. That's not really the intent of the people when they're using chayrim at that time. What they really mean is, everything in here is asr lana, I'm really getting rid of everything. I'm just going to wipe it all out. That's what chayrim means, a time of war. And therefore, in the time of war, when you make a chayrim like that, according to the Ramban, mot yumat. You got to kill all those people. You can't take them with you to be slaves afterwards. Because you're not really thinking at that time in that war that you're going to be walking away. If you make a chayrim, if you make that kind of vow. So according to Ramban, when the pasuk says, when you make a chayrim of people, you have to kill them, he thinks that you're talking about a situation like this one in war, where that's the intention that you must have. So Rashi thinks that it's talking about someone with a death penalty on his head, that he can't be redeemed, so he has to die. And Ramban is talking about more about situations in war, when there's chayrim in those situations, nobody's thinking about taking them afterwards to a kohen. Now the Ramban's going to give you another example from Tanakh. Besides Bnei Israel with Canaan in Bamidbar, he's going to give you a second example where you see something like that also. Third paragraph of the Ramban in source number 5. Matzinu anshei yavesh gilad she'avru al shvuat hakahal v'lo ba'u el hamitzpeh. He's bringing an example from Sefer Shoftim from the end of the book, and he says, we see the same thing with the people of Yavesh Gilad that transgressed the oath of the congregation when they didn't come to Mitzpeh. So this is the horrible story at the end of Sefer Shoftim, when, for those of you who are familiar with the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, okay, right? So basically what happens, there's a man from Levi, and he gets attacked at night with his concubine, and she gets killed when he's in Binyamin territory, and he gets upset and he wants to tell everybody about it, so he cuts her up into pieces and sends it to all Bnei Israel and says, look what they did to her, and it's like, hello. And all Bnei Israel are very upset, and they come to Binyamin, and they say to Binyamin, what's going on over there? If you give us the people in your Shevet that did this stuff, we'll leave you alone, but we got to punish those people. And the Shevet of Binyamin rallied around their men, bad choice, and said, we're not going to give them to you. So all of Bnei Israel basically said to the rest of Bnei Israel, every single person in Bnei Israel has to gather at Mitzpeh. Okay, we make an oath. Everyone has to gather at Mitzpeh because we got to take on Shevet Binyamin and we got to uproot this evil from Sheva Binyamin. And needless to say, all of Bnei Israel fight a war against Sheva Binyamin and almost wipe out Sheva Binyamin to the point where there's almost nobody left, and they make a curse that nobody can marry Sheva Binyamin. And to make a long story short, all of a sudden they realize, oh my gosh, what have we done? That's horrible. And then if nobody marries them, they're going to die out. And then they work out this whole scheme to figure out a way to get them married. Read the end of Sefer Shoftim. It's fascinating stuff. But then all of a sudden they realize, wait a minute, did everybody show up at Mitzpah? Because I don't think everybody showed up at Mitzpah. And they realize that the people from Yavesh Gilad did not show up. And if they didn't show up, then they violated and transgressed the oath. And if they transgress the oath, then they have to be punished. Back to the Ramban. Okay. So, the Ramban is going to try to show you that this is the exact same thing. Uktiv, and here's what the Pasuk says in Shoftim. Vayishlechu sham heidash, 12,000 ish, mibnei hachayel, vayitzavu otam lemor lechu vehakitem et yoshve gilad lefichareth. They sent 12,000 men, 12,000 soldiers, and commanded them to go kill the people of Yavesh Gilad by sword. In Sefer Shoftim, chapter 21, verse 10. Ve'ein asvara notenet, she'asu kol heida re'ah kazot lehamit anashim rabim Yisrael, she'inam chayvim mita. There is no way we could logically understand that the entire Eidah, the entire congregation, would do something that heinous, like kill that many people in Israel if they didn't deserve death. V'Pinchas hayasham, v'alpiv nasa kolinyanehu, and Pinchas, the Kohen Gadol, was alive at that time. We know it from the previous parak, parak chaf. And obviously it was okay with him that they did this. They killed the people of Yavesh Gilad because they transgressed an oath. They killed all those people because they transgressed an oath. The Od Matzati ba'agada b'yom denu, Tani Rabbi Kiva Omer, ha'cherem hu ha'shvua, v'ha'shvua hu ha'cherem. Anshei Yavesh avru al ha'cherem v'nitzchayavu mita. Because a cherem is like a shvua and a shvua is like a cherem, they deserve death. If you are like a cherem, if you are deserving, if you are the equivalent of a cherem, then you deserve death. All those people deserve death, and there was nothing else you could do for them because they were in the status of a cherem, and that's it. All those people, the Ramban says. You have a story in Tanakh. Pinchas allowed it. The Ramban says that's what you mean from the Pasuk, and that was a time of war. That's the Ramban says. That's what the Pasuk is referring to. Ulekach ani omer ki mina katuv hazeh yatza lehem hadin hazeh shekol melech b'Yisrael or Sanhedrin gedola b'mamad kol Yisrael sheyesh lehem reshut b'mishpatim im yachrimu al ir lehilachem aleha v'kein im yachrimu al davar ha'over alav chayavita. Now he makes a very interesting, important point. Okay? And therefore, what I see from this pasuk is that a melech or a Sanhedrin, meaning not you, not me, not, you know, Joella Shmoella, it has to be a king, someone with a legal authority, a big Sanhedrin, or the entire kahal. It has to be everybody. It can't just be any single individual. It has to be someone with a legal authority. If the entire Jewish people, that might work too, but it has to be everybody. Okay? If they all, okay, agree, okay, that they have the ability to decide that they're doing a cherem on a city to fight against it, or they decide that something has a cherem, and that it has mita, then they can do something about it. And that was what they decided on Yavesh Gilad. And that's exactly what happened. He says in the next example, second to last line before I divided the Ramban in half, Shel Yonatan, Shamar lo aviv, cho yase Elohim v'cho yosif, ki mot tumat Yonatan. In Shmuel Aleph, Shaul determined that his son Yonatan deserved death. Anyone know which story I'm referring to? The honey story. Anyone know? Okay. Shaul was about to go into battle, and he wanted everyone to fast, and he said, everybody has to fast. And Yonatan didn't hear him, and he tasted some honey. And when Shaul figured it out, he said Yonatan had to die. Okay? And Shaul, being a king who made an oath that everyone had to fast, because Yonatan transgressed an oath of a king, deserved death. Now, Yonatan didn't die, though, because everybody else came to Yonatan's defense and basically proved to Shaul that Yonatan didn't hear the oath. And then it was a whole miracle, and there are a million different mefarshim that figure out why Yonatan was saved. The Ramban later on, I didn't bring it, says it was a huge miracle, but nevertheless, the Ramban's trying to tell you that based on the letter of the law, if a king makes an oath and someone violates it, then it's like a chayrem, he deserves death, there's nothing you can do for that person. And again, it was a situation of war. So let's review and make sure we're all on the same page. How's that sound? Awesome. Okay. The pasuk says, if a human is a chayrem, he has to die, you cannot redeem him. Rashi, based on the Gemara, says that that means a human who is has a death penalty cannot redeem himself and get out of it. And the Ramban says that in situations of war, if you're taking a vow to make a chayrem out of something, you really have to kill it all. Or if you make a vow during war or oaths during war about things, then whoever violates them has to die. Okay, so that's the Ramban's interpretation. So, you all with me? Okay. If you have questions, write them down, and I'll take them afterwards. I always say to my students, write it down, because by the end, you'll forget what your question was, and that's really annoying. Okay. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Here's the fun part. The Ramban says like this, right below the line, Zehaya ta'uto shel yiftach bibito. And that's the mistake that Yiftach made with his daughter. Everyone know the story of Yiftach and his daughter? Because now we're going to spend some time talking about it. Ki chashav kasher charam nagid Yisrael chal v'kayam lahamit anashim. Because Yiftach thought that since he was the leader of Israel, and he made a vow that it was upon him to murder somebody because he made a vow. So before we come back to the Ramban, I want to step away for a moment and review the Yiftach story. So if everybody could turn the page with me for a moment, I'd like to look at source number 6 and do the Yiftach story inside. So basically what happens is nobody in Bnei Israel really liked Yiftach, but he was a really good soldier, and they were having a lot of trouble against Ammon, and they really needed him. So they asked him to be their leader and save them. And Yiftach basically said to them, okay, fine. I'll be your leader and save you, but on one condition. I don't want to be this guy. I'm not stupid. So I don't want to be like your leader and save you in battle during the battle against Ammon. And then the minute the battle's over, have you guys say, bye-bye. Okay? The only way I'm going to save you during this battle is if I get to be the leader after the battle's over, because I'm not an idiot. I know that you hate me. So he basically insists on a deal, and they're like, fine, because they're desperate, and he's a really good soldier. So that's the deal. And he insists, and this is Sefer Shoftim, so he insists on being a Shofet when it's all over. It's going to be relevant later. Okay. So, by the way, the Perek in Shoftim with the Yiftach story is the Haftorah for Parshat Chukat, because in Chukat, basically what happens is Bnei Israel asks permission from Edom to travel through their land, and they're so thirsty, and Edom's like, no. And Bnei Israel have to walk around. And then Bnei Israel say to Sichon, we're so thirsty, can we like buy some food from you and travel around? And Sichon's like, no. And Sichon's really nasty, and he like goes out and attacks them. And in Shoftim, Yud Aleph, chapter 11, Ammon is attacking Bnei Israel, and Yiftach like sends messengers, much like Moshe did in Chukat. He's like, why are you attacking us? And Ammon's like, because you stole my land. And Yiftach's like, no, we didn't, because if you look at our history, we sent messengers and we asked you if we could go through your land, and it's Parsha Chukah. So that's why they're the Haftorah. But the Haftorah ends right before this story. Okay, so we pick up right where the Haftorah finishes. Okay, so in Pasuk Lamed, source number 6, Vayidor Yiftach Neder LaHashem Vayomer Im Naton Titein Et Bnei Amon Biadi. Yiftach makes a vow, and he says, if you will please give the sons of Ammon into my hand, v'haya hayotzeh asher yetzeh midzaltei beiti lekrati b'shuvi b'shalom b'bnei Ammon, v'haya l'Hashem v'haliteu olah. Then that which leaves the house, the doors of my house to greet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon will be to God, and I will make an olah from it. I will sacrifice from it. Second line, verse 32, Pasuk Lamed Bet. Vayavor Yiftach el b'nei Ammon lihilachim ba v'itneim Hashem b'yado. So Yiftach goes to b'nei Ammon to fight them, and Hashem gives them to him in his hand. Lamed Gimel Vayakim me'aroer v'ad bo'acha Meinit Esrim Ir Va'ad Avel Kramim Makag Dolah Ma'od V'yikanu b'nei Ammon mipnei b'nei Yisrael, and he strikes them from this city to that city, 20 cities, a huge strike, and b'nei Ammon subjugate themselves in front of b'nei Yisrael. Lama Dalad V'yavo Yiftach Hamitzpe El Beito. Yiftach comes back to his house. V'hine Bito Yotzeit Likrato V'tupim Amirchalot. His daughter, surprisingly, comes out to greet him with musical instruments and tambourines and dances. Varakhi yichida, and she alone. Ein lo mimenu ben ubat, and she is alone to him, no sons or daughters. Vayihi kiroto ta, and when he sees her, vayikra bigadav, he tears his clothes. Vayomar, aha biti, and he goes, oh God, daughter. Hachrea hachretani, you have brought me to my knees. Va'at hayit be'ochrai, and you are part of the people who have brought me down. Va'anofi patsiti piel Hashem, I have opened my mouth to God. V'lo uchal lashuv, and I cannot take it back. Va'tomer elav, and she said to him, Avi patsita pichel Hashem, you have opened your mouth to God. Aseli kasher yatsami picha, so do what has come out of your mouth. Since God has done for you vengeance from your enemies, from Ammon. Vatomer el avia. She said to her father, Yaselia Devarza, could you just do one thing? Harpami many shnaim chodashim, could I just have 2 months? Velcha, veyarati al harim, vevkao betulai, anofi vereotai, and I'm going to go down to the mountains and cry over my virginity, me and my friends. Vayomer lichi, he said, you can go. Vayishlach otah shnei chodeshim, and he sent her for 2 months. Vatelechi v'reotel v'tefchal betuleh al harim, and she went with her friends to cry over her virginity over the mountains. Vayihi miket shnei chodeshim, and after 2 months, vateshev elavir, she came back to her dad. Vayas la et nidro asher nadah, he fulfilled her, he did to her the vow that he vowed. V'hi lo yedai ish, and she did not know a man. Vadihi chok b'Yisrael, and it became a law in Israel. Miyamim yamima, and from year to year, telachna benot Yisrael letanot levat Yiftach ha-giladi. The daughters of Israel would go lament the daughter of Yiftach, arba'im yamim b'shana, 4 days a year. Okay, so we gotta talk about this one. So, first of all, let's talk a little bit about Yiftach's vow. Because technically, right, no good deed goes unpunished, but boy did his deed go punished. Because technically he didn't do anything wrong. Let's talk about the example that the Ramban brought with B'nai Yisrael and the Knanim. His vow is no different on a certain level, right? If I go into war, if you put these enemies into my hand, then, I mean, the concept's exactly the same. You're about to go into war, you don't feel worthy, you're making a vow to Hashem, so you do something. So you know, conceptually speaking, what Yiftach was doing was not wrong. He's doing exactly, if you want to take it out of the war example, Yaakov did the same exact thing when he was running away from home, running away from Esav in Beit El, right? Rivka and Yitzchak send him away, and the first thing we see in Parshat Vayetze is he runs away, he goes to sleep on the rocks. We all know the Midrash, all the little rocks fight, they turn into one rock. And what he basically says is he's terrified. So he says to Hashem, if you return me in Shalom, then when I come back, I will make this place a holy place, Beit El. So instead of it being a war thing and a chayrem thing, he turns it into a worship thing. If you return me in peace back to this land, to my father, then I will make this into a house of worship. So the whole concept of, if you help me be successful, if you help me come back in peace, then I will do something for you, as a concept is fine. Okay? But, obviously, it's the content of what he said that's the problem. Because, let's be honest, okay, saying that you're going to bring sacrifices in of itself is also not a problem, because, in essence, that's what Yaakov did. By saying it would be a house of worship, saying that he was going to bring sacrifices, it's what he said, really, what did he think was going to come out of the house and greet him? A goat? Why is he having goats in his house? Because God was like doing that thing where he's putting all the animals in the house so it'll feel so spacious? He's that guy? Oh, okay. So, yeah. I'll get to you. You're right. Well, one minute. I'll get to you. You're right. Okay. So I want to bring your attention to source number, 10. If everyone could look with me at number 10. In Vayikra Rabbah, and this is brought in different variants. It's brought in the Gemara and Tanis. It's also brought in Bereishis Rabbah, different versions of the same idea. The Midrash points out that Arba'a patchu b'nidarim, shlosha shalu shlo kehogen, v'heshiva makodesh baruch hu kehogen, echad shal shlo kehogen, v'heshiva makom shlo kehogen. There are four people, okay, that had vows. Three asked inappropriately, but God answered them appropriately anyway. One of them who asked inappropriately got answered inappropriately. And this is basically about how Yiftach answered inappropriately and didn't do so well, but there are also three other people who also asked inappropriately, but they turned out okay. So let's go through it. And basically what it says, Eluhen, here are the four people who made vows, but what they asked for, they did it wrong. Eliezer, Eved Avraham, Shaul, Yiftach, and Kalev. All four of them said things to Hashem and they didn't do it right. Eliezer Sha'al Shelo Kehogen, Eliezer, asked not the right way when he said, Hine Hanara Asher Omar Eleha Hati Na Kadech, when he was at the well and he said, and the girl who says, oh, you know, turn the pitcher this way, when he was looking for a wife for Yitzchak, Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Ilu Yatztash Shivcha Knani or Zona, Hayita Omer Ata Hochachta L'Avdecha L'Yitzchak. You said that, you know, I can tell, oh God, can you help me find the right wife? I'll know from the girl who does the pitcher this way. Really? If I sent you a Canaanite servant or a prostitute, and she did her pitcher this way, would you have known exactly who was supposed to be the right one? Could you maybe have put a little bit more criteria there in your request? So Hashem said, nice asking there, Vizimein lo Rivka. And nevertheless, Hashem sent him Rivka, so he did okay. Okay, fourth line. Kalev sha'al shelo kehogen, Kalev ben Yifune, also didn't ask appropriately, Shne Emar. Vayomer Kalev asher yakeh kiryat sefer, v'lachta v'natati lo et ichsa biti lisha. Whoever can conquer the city, Kiryat Sefer, I will give Ichsa my daughter as a wife. Heshivo Kadosh Baruch Hu. So God said to him, really? Ilu lachta knani or mamzer or eved? Hayita noten lo bitech? Really? So if any mamzer or eved or Canaanite came and actually conquered the city for you, you're just going to hand your daughter over to him? Really? You couldn't have come up with any few more details there for your suit or for your daughter when you're just handing her over to anybody who manages to conquer the city like he has a big whatever. Okay. Masa Kadosh Baruch Hu, Zimein lo et echav elachdash ne'mar v'yachideh Atniel ben Kenaz. God helped him out anyway, and his brother conquered the city because Otniel ben Kenaz was the one who conquered Kiryat Sefer. Sha'ul sha'al shelo kehogen. Sha'ul also didn't say it so right. Shne'emar v'haya ha'ish asher yakenu ya'ashrenu ha'melcho shagadol ve'bito yitein lo. When Shaul had Goliath in front of him, Goliath, and he was sitting there threatening them, right? The Plishtim were quite scary, and nobody could bring Goliath down. Shaul sat there and said, okay, anybody who can bring this Goliath down, the king will give him huge wealth and his daughter as a wife. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ilu Harag Amoni, O Mamzer, or Eved, so an Ammonite who we're not allowed to marry, or again, the mamzer, or a slave, comes by and manages to knock down Goliath, you're letting your daughter marry him? God arranged it that David was the one who brought down Goliath, and David, and Michal was married to David. Yiftach, Sha'al Shalokoho again, Yiftach also had a vow, a neder, and he also asked inappropriately, Shnemar, V'haya ha-yotze asher yetze midalte biti, that which leaves the doors of my house, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ilo yetza gamal, or chamor, or kelev, hayitim aleola, if a camel, a donkey, or a dog left your house, you're going to bring a korban for that for me? But God responded inappropriately to him, so to speak, and gave him and arranged it that his daughter came out. And then the story goes on. So Yiftach was not the only one who asked inappropriately, but he was the only one who got responded to inappropriately. And what we need to figure out is why. So first of all, what do the other three have in common that his doesn't? All the other three who asked inappropriately were? They're all marriage. Come on, it's on everybody's brain. I can't believe you didn't spit it out right away. So you know what that tells you? As much as we want to get everyone married off, just because they're both tall and have a pulse, it's not enough. Alrighty then. Okay, so now let's go back to the Ramban. And let's try to figure out what exactly was the ta'ut of Yiftach. And let's try to figure out what exactly happened wrong. Why did Hashem not answer him kehogen? Because, first of all, conceptually speaking, making a vow is not wrong. And the fact that content-wise, he wasn't the only one who's been wrong. So what about what he did was off? That's what I'd like to try to figure out. I'd like to share with you some of what I found and see if we can come up with some kind of an answer to walk away with. Okay? So if we go back to the Ramban, source number 5, page 2, the last two paragraphs on the bottom. Okay. Basically, the reason why the Ramban brings in Yiftach is because he thinks it's all based out of this pasuk that Yiftach messed up. Zehaya ta'uto shel Yiftach bevito, because this is the mistake that Yiftach made with his daughter. Ki chashav kasher charam nagid Yisrael chal v'kayam lahamit anashim o ha'over al chamo chayav mita kein im nadar ve'ed melchama lasom isha anashim zevach yachul ha'neder. Basically, the mistake that Yiftach made was that he thought that if a ruler of Israel makes a cherem, And even if it involves killing people, that it is binding. And that if you go against this chayrim that you made, you deserve death. And if you make a vow during war, even if it's to make a korban out of a person, this vow is binding. And he didn't realize that these cherems of kings and of Sanhedrins are really about people who are rebelling or who are transgressing their gzerot and their rules. But it's not about a king saying, you are going to be my korban. That's not what we're talking about. And this is your point over here, exactly what you started to say. The Ramban says, but that a vow would be made about somebody who was never allowed to be a korban in the first place, that could never, ever possibly be a vow that would have to be fulfilled. That could never be a chayrem that would have to be binding. Ein ra'ui l'Hashem chas v'chalil, God forbid. That's the mistake that he made. He knew this pasuk, so to speak, but he didn't know enough Torah to know that he was doing it wrong. And that's why Lekach Amar B'Bereishis Rabba, and that's the B'Bereishis Rabba I was referring to before, they bring that whole, four guys who say it wrong, and then Hashem answered them, and then they bring this machloket between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and the Ramban says, and that's why it says in B'Bereishis Rabba, Afilu hektesh damen lo hachayav b'nei nash b'dama. Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree. Reish Lakish says that because he made a neder about something that you wouldn't have even been allowed to bring a korban from in the first place, he wouldn't have even needed to redeem her for her monetary value. Like, it wasn't even binding on any level whatsoever. It's not like he said, oh, I'm going to bring a korban from the first thing that comes. Oh, she walked out of the house. Oh, obviously I can't bring a korban from her, so I better give money instead. It's not binding on any level, says Reish Lakish. He could never have given a korban from her in the first place. It's over. But to say, oh, I can't give from her, so let me give money instead, Reish Lakish is like, no. You can't give a korban from her. The conversation's over. So the Ramban says, like, that's ridiculous. And then the Ramban says, V'al tiyeh nefateh behavle Rabbi Avraham ha'omer, ki perish v'haliteu Allah o v'haliteu lomar imya yotze midalte beti isho isha v'hayala shem kodesh yeh parush midarche olam la'amod l'sharif v'shem Hashem v'tfilah v'ado le'alim. And please don't be like I guess tricked or fooled into the silliness, emptiness of Rabbi Avraham's idea, who Rabbi Avraham would be Ibn Ezra, who unfortunately, we don't have the Ibn Ezra's Perush on Shoftim. So he quotes Ibn Ezra, but we don't actually have that today. Who says that when it says V'haliteu Olah, that when Yiftach said he was going to bring a sacrifice from her, whoever leaves the door of my house, that he didn't actually do it. How did he raise her up, so to speak? He separated her from the ways of the world, and he brought her up to God because he pulled her away from the rest of the world, and she spent the rest of her life davening and praising God. And that's what it means when it was saying that she was off to the mountains and that she never knew a man again. She just went off to the mountains and lived by herself in total seclusion, never having anything to do with anybody again, but spent the rest of her life communing with God. And only 4 days a year, her friends would go visit her and mourn with her that that's how she spent the rest of her life. She could never get married, she could never have kids, she could never have a full life, she could never be with the rest of society. And Ramban's like, please, do not believe that answer of the Ibn Ezra, that's ridiculous. However, Abarbanel, Radak, Rabag, they all say the same thing. Ruach. those words of empty wind. It's ridiculous that he would set up a house for her outside the city and have her live alone like a hermit and like take care of her. Give me a break. That's not how it works. If he vowed that she would belong to God, he would not have her live alone separate like that. Aval yekmo Shmuel. She'amra imo v'nit tativ l'Hashem. Like when Hannah had Shmuel and said, I give him to God, what did she do? Hayam esharei b'beit Hashem. She gave him to the Mikdash and he worked there, or the Mishkan and he worked there. Lo parush. He wasn't like separate and alone forever. That's not what it means. If he had to give her to God, why would she live alone in the mountains in a hut, like Heidi? He would basically be in the Mishkan working there or something. Okay? Interestingly, side note, the Abarbanel, who, like the Radak and the Ralbag, holds like the Ibn Ezra, I don't really understand this so much, but the Abarbanel thinks that that's what Yiftach did with her, and that that's where the Christians got the idea of a nunnery from. The idea of women completely separating themselves from society and living alone and communing with God. Interesting. Anyway, Ukefi Mishpatei Torah, I'm on the top of line, page 3. Ein Biyad Ha'adam, and this goes back to my friend here's point over here. Ein Biyad Ha'adam Sheyidor B'yotzei Petach Beito Sheyeh Prushim. It is not in the power of any man to make a vow that he who leaves the doorway of his house to be separate from the rest of mankind. Just like I can't, you know, make a vow that I can make anybody else a sacrifice. I don't have the binding authority to do that to any other human being. Like, oh my God, that it would be a rule in Israel? That, like, you're supposed to lament 4 days a year because, like, she didn't get married and she had to, like, worship God in holiness? What is that about, he says. Aval hadavar kipshuto. It's exactly like I said. He made a mistake. He was wrong. And he sacrificed her. Thank you. That leads me to our next part of the shiur. She said, how come nobody stopped him? Yeah, so now we get to the good part. Now we get to the good part, sources 8 and 9. Do I have time? When did I start? Okay. But how much time do I have? Because I could do it fast or short if people have to leave. Okay, fast. Okay. So sources 8 and 9. So 8, I'll just tell you outside. Basically what it tells you is, Yiftach Bedoro Kishmuel Bedoro. Yiftach was in his generation like Shmuel was in his generation. So on the one hand, you could read that by saying Yiftach was on a high level, except that if you read the first line of the Gemara, it says that, look, low people are like high people once they become the leader of a generation. So basically what they're saying is Yiftach's a low person. Why? What are you talking about? If you look at the Midrash Tanchuma in source number 9, what it's basically telling you is that if you look in source number 9 at the end of line 2, Mipnei Shelo Haya Ben Torah Ibeid Epito. Because he didn't know Torah, he lost his daughter. Okay? So unfortunately, we don't have time to go through the entire Midrash Tanchuma. Now, much like the Vayikra Rabbah, source number 10 that I brought you, that's also in the Gemara in Tanis, Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, and is in Bereishis Rabbah, and is in the Yalkut Shemoni, and there are a million different versions. This Midrash Tanchuma is also in the Yalkut Shemoni. There are a lot of different versions of it. The reason why I brought this Midrash Tanchuma from B'chu Kosai is because I found that the conversation between Yiftach and his daughter in this one is the most fascinating. So unfortunately, I don't have time to go through it. But if you do, just like the argument between them where she's begging for her life, and he's like, look, I can't help you. I don't know what to tell you. I can't help you. Is like really like fascinating. Where she keeps on like arguing with him, Torah psukim. But it says this. Here, I'll show you one line, okay? Where she basically says, but it says that you bring korbanos from animals, not from people. And he's like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, she's, like, brilliant. He's like, I don't know what to tell you. So basically what's going on like this. Okay, so let's start where I started. Ignatia Loya, Bentora, Ibeda, Datel, line 3, fifth word. Eimatai, when did this happen? Bishasha Nilcham in Bnei Amon, Vinadar, when he was fighting with Bnei Amon and vowed, Shneamar, Vidar, Yiftach Nadar, Shem, Vayatse, when he made his vow, fine. But Oto, Sha'a, Ka'asa, Lava, Kadosh Baruch Hu, God got angry at him. Amar, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ila, Yatsami, Beto, Kelev, or Chazir, or Gamal, Yakriv, Lufanai, Zimin, Lo, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Beto, there's the version. What, really? Whatever leaves your house, if it's a pig, you're gonna sacrifice it to me? So Hashem gave him his daughter. And that's when the pasuk says, oh, behold, his daughter leaves to greet him. And when he sees her, oh my God, he cries out, oh God, daughter. Okay. Hello, Pinchas, Hayasham. Pinchas was there. Vehu Omer, Lo Uchal Lashuv. And he says, oh, daughter, I'm so sorry. There's nothing I can do to take it back. But Pinchas was there. Ela Pinchas Amar, Pinchas says, Ani Kohen Gadol, Ben Kohen Gadol, Ashpil Etzmi, Ve'elech Etzel Am Ha'aretz. I should lower myself and go to this Am Ha'aretz, this nobody, and go down to him to get him out of this vow. The Yiftach Amar, Ani Rosh Shiftei Yisrael, I'm the head of all the tribes. Rosh HaKanitzinim, the head of all the generals. Ashpil Atzmi Ve'elech Etzel Het Yot. I should lower myself and go to him to get myself out of this vow. Mi Ben Shnehem, and between the two of them, Avda Hahu Aluva, this Nebuch girl lost her life. Vishnehem Nitchaivu Bidameha, and the two of them became guilty of her blood. Pinchas Nistalka Mimenu Ruach HaKodesh, he lost Ruach HaKodesh because of it. Yiftach Nitpazru Atzmotav, Yiftach, all of his limbs fell off. Shne'emar v'yikaver be'arei Gilad, because it says in the pasuk he was buried in the cities of Gilad. Because it doesn't say he was buried in a city, it says he was buried in the cities. If you look in Divrei Hayamim, you can like see, you can figure out that after a while the kahuna was no longer in Pinchas's family, it switched over, he was from Elazar, you can see that for a while the kahuna switched over to Itamar's family. Like the kahuna stopped for a while in Pinchas' family, and you have to wonder if it's because of this. Eventually it gets back to Elazar, but for a significant amount of time, if you follow the genealogies in Divrei Hayamim, Pinchas' family aren't the Kohanim anymore. So he paid a high price for that. I don't understand, I haven't had time to really research Pinchas to figure out how that could be. Like, I just don't get that. Considering who he was, I don't understand it, but he didn't go to Yiftach, and Yiftach didn't go to him. In any event, the rest of the Tanchuma goes through the conversation that Yiftach and his daughter had, where she's basically begging him to get him out of this neder. Like, come on, Hashem told Avraham not to kill his kid. I don't think Hashem wants you to do this, Dad. Like, these are the arguments she's using. And he's like, yeah, nah, I don't think so. And in the end, basically, he feels like he has no way out of it. So you have to wonder, when you go back to the Midrash in Vayikra Rabbah, why is it that Hashem answered him with the inappropriate response? It's because he may have meant well at the time, but Hashem obviously saw that there was something in him that didn't deserve, if I may say, to get the right response. But what I want to close with, Nebuch for her, what I want to close with is two thoughts, which is that a little bit of Torah is a dangerous thing. Because Yiftach obviously knew the Pasuk, he obviously knew some of the law, but he obviously didn't know all of the law. And I just think that in today's day and age, where it's amazing how much Torah we learn, and it's amazing how many shiurim we'll go to, and how many books are at our disposal, and I'll say it, thank God for Art Scroll, especially Art Scroll Gemaras, I wouldn't be able to do what I do without them. But I also think that we're still supposed to ask shilas, and we're still supposed to ask rabbis, and we're not supposed to forget that we're not supposed to always paskin for ourselves, There's some things, like the little things, we're supposed to be able to do ourselves, but we're not supposed to forget that we don't know everything, and that we're not supposed to always be doing it ourselves. Like, we haven't completely eliminated the entire rabbinical process just because we learn everything. And I think that that's starting to become, if I may little old me say, a symptom of our times, where because we're becoming so learned, it's becoming almost a problem that we're forgetting that we still don't know everything. So I was just thinking about that when I was learning the Pinchas story, that like sometimes a little bit of Torah is a dangerous thing. Instead of it making us realize how little we know, it makes us think we know so much already. That was one thought I wanted to share. And then the other thing I wanted to share was the Sefer HaChinuch at the bottom. So every time there's a mitzvah in the Sefer HaChinuch, there's a Misharshei HaMitzvah. What's at the root of the mitzvah? And what I thought was fascinating is that in this week's Parsha, when he talks about the values of human beings, you know what he thinks the shorish of the mitzvah is? The value of speech. Would you have picked that? Me neither. And he basically says that because what's the value of a human being? He goes back to Parsha Bereishit, where Onkelos says that what makes the value of a human when we were created with Tzel Melkim, Ruach Memamala, I said that wrong, which is like our ability to, you know, speak. And I just think that, again, if you take Yiftach and you take the Midrash of Vayikra Rabbah, how carefully we need to speak and the value of speech and how careful we all need to be is just something that I could all be reminded of is just, you know, one more example. And if we take any of that from, and we take Yiftach's daughter to heart, we help it all, we'll make her life a little bit more meaningful. So thank you.